Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Yes, it's Saturday again. I think it's the second Saturday in January. I've already lost track, and the year is young. Oh, my. Anyway, we have lots to go over with you this morning. It's been another action-packed week. We're going to be talking about all sorts of stuff. You know, the University of Chicago finally woke up, and they're telling Obama to kind of stick his so-called library, you know, that $100 million taxpayer money fiasco that Illinois, which is broke, was going to have to fund. I'll tell you all about that. They kind of caught him in one of his lies. Of course, that's pretty easy to do if you have your eyes half open. And we're going to talk about the Democratic Party. I mean, I've talked about that ad infinitum. It just gets worse and worse and worse. Let me tell you a little bit more about Keith Ellison, the second in command at the DNC. I've told you a little bit about him in the past, but oh, I got some juicy stuff to tell you now. And that is the number two guy in the Democratic Party. And we're going to talk a little bit about FBI, you know, the corrupt FBI hierarchy. We're going to talk about some of the testimony that Congress has now uncovered, emails from Uma Abedin, which she lied to the FBI about. We're going to talk about Obama once again in his true treasonous pro-Iran, pro-Muslim, pro-Islamist, pro-alt-left, anti-American. I mean, that is his persona. I've given you so many dots on this in the past shows. I mean, you just dial up Obama's name in the search bar. And just when you think there's like no more dots to add, you get more dots. Wait till I tell you about him giving away Israeli intelligence to thwart an Israeli plan to kill perhaps the top terrorist in the world. Because the top terrorist in the world happens to be Iranian. But I'll tell you all about it. And we're going to talk a little bit about Mr. Orr at the Justice Department, who was demoted once again. Boy, I guess I think he's in deep caca along with his wife, working with and for Fusion GPS. And we're going to talk about immigration because, you know, I am sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of the crap from the Democrats, from the progressives, I might add, the alt-left. And I am really getting sick and tired of the rhino Republicans, Lindsey Graham and Corin from, Flake. What a perfect name for him. Flake from Arizona. Let me tell you what's going on with that. Let me see if I can kind of paint the picture for you. You've heard bits and pieces, et cetera, from various news outlets. Let me see if I can't wrap this into a big ball of wax and make it succinct for you. And by the way, there'll be a call to action because you need to call or write your senators and your congressmen and make sure that what these people are trying to perpetrate on us again after doing it for the last 40 years, you know, the fundamental transformation of America, that they don't get it done this time. And we're going to talk about the economy. Listen, the economy is rocking. Donald Trump has been terrific for this economy. The tax cuts are terrific. Walmart just announced raises for like a million employees. Several other companies since my last show, hundreds of thousands of workers, raises, bonuses. There's one company, and I don't have their name right here, but there's one company that's giving $2,000 bonuses to like 36,000 employees. $2,000. And Nancy Pelosi, of course, stands up and goes, "That's pathetic." Really, Nancy? Oh, what an alternate universe the progressives live in. And we're gonna, but there are some warning signs. There's some things that I'm gonna make you cognizant of that you need to keep kind of your eye on for your financial security and the security of your family. You know, wine and roses is not all wine and roses ever. I don't care what it is. everything that goes up must come down, and everything that goes down must come up. And you need to keep those kind of bedrock principles in mind. And I'm going to give you some, shall we say, canaries in the coal mine to watch when it comes to your investments, whatever they happen to be, whether it's cash in the bank or whether it's plans for investments or your home. Yes, it will affect real estate, your stocks, your 401s, whatever. Once again, I don't pretend to be an investment advisor. I am not. But this is 2+2+4 stuff. I just want to bring it to your attention. I think you'll find it kind of fascinating, by the way, because it's not stuff that virtually any American, other than Americans who are really deeply embedded in the financial services industry or Wall Street, pay attention to. And then, of course, we're going to have our segment. It seems like this is becoming a weekly segment, right? On the latest treasonous scandals to emerge. More texts between treason FBI Strzok and Comey and McCabe and Gray, Strzok's girlfriend, by the way, extramarital affair that they were both hiding from their significant others. Kind of interesting. Might tell you a little bit about them. And it'll just blow your mind. It also adds concrete layers to the concrete facts that have been established about the FBI and certainly the intel agencies being weaponized by Obama. And by the way, what's come out this week, as I'm going to tell you, absolutely proves conclusively my theory, which is that the Trump dossier was the precipitator of the FISA warrants, which, by the way, it's felonies from A to Z. A to Z. So we're going to finish up the show with that. I'm also going to I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some things which have been occurring as I see them, kind of in the general, shall we say, how folks get along in this country. How's that? I think the mainstream media calls it divisive. The mainstream media calls it, you know, this, that, and the other. But bottom line is, how are folks getting along? I might have a few comments mixed in with the show as we go along that route. Before we get started on the show, let me tell you a story. A story. This is a story of reverse kindness. You know, I've given you several stories over the past, oh, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months where I kind of lent a helping hand, gave a book to a gal who couldn't afford one, helped somebody else do something. I mean, I don't even remember what the kindness was, and I exhorted you to do the same. Well, so I took a couple days off and went skiing up in Jackson Hole. I'm up on top of the tram. It's howling. I mean, you couldn't see 20 feet. Snowing, blowing snow. I mean, anybody who's been up to the top of the Tetons in a storm, you know what I'm talking about, or the top of any high peak. And I have, you know, I'm kind of a relic when it comes to skiing. I have this one pair of skis that I use as powder skis. They're probably 20 years old. They may be older. I don't know. The bindings, God only knows how old they are. And the bindings are finally wearing out, as I might add, are the skis. And the bindings are at the point where literally when I put my heel down in them, they won't click shut. You have to kind of manually assist them or, you know, kind of grab them with the other ski and lift them up or with your boot or whatever it is. Kind of a pain in the butt, and I would imagine probably way unsafe too. So I'm up here in this howling storm, having just gotten off the tram, and I'm perfectly capable of bending down and closing the bindings. I'm not that much of a relic. And anyway, I didn't feel like bending down just because of the wind and all, so I was trying to play with them with my ski pole. And all of a sudden, this guy who was behind me, who also putting on his skis, in a either Austrian or German accent, very heavy, said, "Let me help." He bends down and he clicks the binding that I had been working on into place. And I was so surprised. I mean, I just kind of looked at him and said, "Well, thank you." And I started putting on the other ski, and all of a sudden he was there and he helped me on with that ski. I mean, I felt kind of like a, I don't know. But I really appreciated that little act of kindness. I mean, this guy spending whatever it was, 20 or 30 seconds in the middle of that storm, helping somebody put on two skis, who was perfectly capable of putting on the skis himself. And later on, when I was, halfway down the mountain, by the way, atrocious run. I mean, there was no visibility. I was all over the place. It was not my usual graceful skiing. I hear a voice behind me as I'm stopped along the side of the mountain. He goes, "I've been watching you ski. You ski very well." It was the same guy. And, you know, I had to laugh. I laughed and said, "Well, you know, you're pretty kind, but I don't quite think that that's how this run has gone." But anyway, my point is that these little acts of kindness, I've given you some that I've done for other folks. I'm sure we all have stories about this. But this little act of kindness by this gentleman from another country, obviously, who didn't have to do squat, could have just skied off. And actually assisting somebody who really didn't need the assistance. I mean, he was just being kind and courteous. Was very impressive. So, the moral of the story is little acts of kindness make big impressions, no matter which way they flow. Now, let's get into the show. And you'll have to forgive me, because on some of these segments, I'm not going to be very kind. So, let's start off with Obama-wama. Barry, our buddy, who, when he moves his lips, lies. Our anti-American, pro-Islamist, buddy-buddy with Iran, unfortunately, president for 8 years. I told you about, 4, 5, 6 months ago, you can put it up in the search bar, just put in states or financial states or state finances, and the show should come up. I gave you a list of all the states that were in trouble, which, by the way, happened to be blue states with the exception of one, and all the states that were doing well, which happened to be red states, no exceptions. And I told you about Illinois, which is flat broke. They can't even make their current operating expenses. I mean, they're like hundreds of million dollars behind on their day-to-day bills. Yet, Chicago and Illinois were going to put up $100 million of their taxpayers' money. Remember, this is one of the red states that got socked by this new tax law because of high property taxes and high income taxes that rich blue people can't write off anymore. They were going to take $100 million of their taxpayers' money, and they were going to fund the Obama Library. Ooh, oh, makes my heart just go pitter-patter. And by the way, along with the funding, the city was going to give, and the University of Chicago was going to give, the so-called library 19 acres of public parkland right on the lake. I mean, this is very valuable land. Obviously, a public park in the middle of a huge city with a lake shore is a valuable public asset that I'm sure tens of thousands, if not more, people enjoy every year. But they were going to give them the land. They were going to grant them the land. Well, it so happens, and Obama was telling him, you know, the library and the archives and the books and all this kind of stuff. Well, now that the plans, which, by the way, are just uglier than sin, now that the plans have been released, guess what? There's no books. There's no archives. It's like a media place. It's like movies and, you know, social engineering stuff. It's not a library at all. Well, people got so ticked off that the University of Chicago faculty, which I would hardly term right wing, has signed a letter, and the university is telling Obama to move, quote, his socially regressive presidential library. 100 faculty members of the University of Chicago signed the letter, told him to find a new location. And the Obama Presidential Center, they complained that Obama will not provide, quote, the promised development or economic benefits, unquote, to surrounding neighborhoods. Quote, we are concerned that these are not the best ways to use public funds to invest in the future of Chicago, unquote. The parks, by the way, that this library was going to inundate with its ugly self was Jackson Park and Midway Plaisance, or Plaisance, I might be pronouncing that wrong. It would also force the closure of a road, which is like a major commuting road, the Southside Thoroughfare and Corner Avenue. So the professors also put in their protest letter, their revocation letter, that in addition to this thing not being what it was touted to be, that was going to cause a traffic jam, in addition to depriving the public of the park space and the public treasury of $100 million. The guy who is in charge of this is a guy by the name of Blair Kamen. He's the architecture critic at the Chicago Tribune. Now, also not a left-wing guy, not a right-wing guy, right? Obama, by the way, lectured at the University of Chicago Law School from 1992 to 2004. Boy, I'd love to see his students now. Maybe it's some of those people. maybe some of those people are now judges out there in the Fourth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit. What do you think? So 19 acres of 150-year-old parks on the lake at $100 million of taxpayer expense based on Obama's representation that it was going to be a library with books and archives and all sorts of goodies. However, and also he represented that because of the books and the archives and all the throngs that it would attract, there'd be huge economic benefit to the entire neighborhood. Oh, yes. It's all great. It's all great. The professors, by the way, the University of Chicago disagrees. Quote, there is no available adjacent land in which to start a new business, set up a new cafe or restaurant, or bring another cultural center to the neighborhood. The only new jobs created by the library will be the staff of the Obama Center, unquote. Quote, at a time of increasing complexity and pressure in urban life, Chicago should be dedicated to preserving our public parks as open areas for relaxation and play for all its citizens. They urged Obama and his foundation, I wonder if it's like the Clinton Foundation, quote, to explore alternative sites on the South Side that could be developed with more economic benefits. Excuse me. Big sneeze. Maybe it's from that that storm up on top of the tram. To explore alternative sites on the South Side that could be developed with more economic benefits, better public transportation, and less cost to the taxpayers. By the way, as an adjunct story, the opponents who are rapidly rising in Chicago, once again, not right-wing people. Excuse me. Not right-wing people. have black and white called Obama's proposal a bait and switch. In other words, he baited him with this library, cultural center, archives, you know, history deal, when really all he was doing was like a social media theater complex, no doubt to tout himself and his progressive and Islamist beliefs. So, you know, Obama is Obama. Period. Now, this ties right into the Democratic National, or the Democratic Party and the Democratic National Committee, because Obama, of course, is a quote-unquote Democrat. Actually, he's not a Democrat. He's a progressive Islamist. He is the poster boy for the unholy alliance of the alt-left and radical Islam. That's exactly what he is. But the deputy chair, the second-in-command of the DNC, Keith Ellison, we've talked about him before. He happens to be Muslim. He's from Minnesota. He has outrageous quotes and comments. Second-in-command of the Democratic Party, he posed in a Twitter photo. By the way, we're going to talk a little bit about that also. Twitter, Google, their rampage against conservatives, how they're trying to control the information you see. He poses in a Twitter photo with the book Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, written by Mark Bray, by the way. Mark Bray, if you remember, I've talked about on previous shows, is the guy who exhorts violence to overthrow the fascist regime in Washington. He is the poster boy for alt-left violence. So Mark Bray's book, by the way, is filled with anti-white rhetoric, how to set up kill zones. You'll love this. Kill zones for ending the lives of conservatives and white people. And, you know, I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? The FBI and the DHS have both classified Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization whose members are devoted to, I quote, in their reports, domestic terrorist violence, unquote. Now, think about Keith Ellison, a Muslim from Minnesota, also a congressman, and, I mean, Minnesota, what are you thinking? Also a congressman and the second-in-command of the Democratic National Party, of the Democratic Party and the DNC. He's holding up this book, basically saying how great the book is. The book, one of the quotes from the book is, militant anti-fascism, in other words, violence, is a reasonable, historically informed response to the fascist threat that persisted after 1945 and has become especially menacing in recent years. Of course, they're talking about Trump, etc. Now, listen, Ellison is known for his anti-Semitic remarks, his pro-Islamist remarks. Remember, I've defined this many times for you. So you have Muslims who are peaceful folks, believe in their religion, God bless them, you know, good Americans or good Muslims and patriotic in whatever country they happen to be from. They don't wish anybody harm. They want to get about their life. They want to follow their religion. God bless them. And then you have the Sharia believers, the Islamists, those who believe that anybody who is not Muslim is an infidel and that Allah has commanded them to kill them or convert them. And if not convertible, then exterminate them. When you have a congressman, never mind the number two guy who almost won the election to be the chairman, I might add, of the Democratic National Committee espousing these type of anti-Semitic, pro-Islamist, anti-American, pro-violence, pro-alt-left ideals, I find it highly, highly disturbing. Ellison, by the way, has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. I've talked about them ad infinitum, a treacherous group, a Islamist group that is trying to win, quote-unquote, what they call the Holy War, through civilizational jihad, and where that doesn't work, then through violence. Ellison happens to have ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, and I reported on this like 3 months ago, they paid him $13,500 to take a pilgrimage to Mecca back in 2008. By the way, Ellison did not disclose this financial donation. Doesn't that surprise you? A Democrat didn't disclose money? He must be a disciple of Hillary. Ellison also defended, just to give you an idea how loony this guy is, the famed, or infamous, however you'd like to look at it, anti-Semite, anti-American, anti-capitalism, anti-constitution, anti-any race but black, Louis Farrakhan, who's the head of the Nation of Islam. Gee, well, another tie-in. All right. Ellison has tried to worm out of that. He did an op-ed a year ago saying he should have more closely scrutinized Farrakhan, who once said Hitler was a very great man. But Ellison blamed a right-wing smear campaign. Gee, where have we heard that? Oh, that's right, Hillary Clinton, the great right conspiracy. I find the Democrats increasingly repulsive. The Democratic Party has strayed so far from John F. Kennedy, who is a great president in many respects, with his fallacies. They all have them, folks. Reagan had his fallacies. Trump has his fallacies. Clinton certainly had his. Obama, well, you know, Obama speaks for himself. You can go all the way back to the very first president, including George Washington, and nobody's perfect. Welcome to the human race. Of course, we don't want to look at policies. We want to attack people. That's what the Democrats do. Now, that kind of brings us to our next little segment. I had planned to bring you a show, which was about half devoted to what Google, to the dangers of high-tech companies. And you're beginning to hear the rumbles of this out. I wouldn't call it the mainstream, but it's getting close to the mainstream. You know, Google altering its algorithms to drive traffic to liberal sites rather than conservative sites. By the way, On the Right Side Radio has experienced that firsthand. Let me tell you that we found out to our dismay that our site was labeled explicit by Google. Now, I don't know what's explicit about this site other than our pro-American views. But explicit is a term that's supposed to be used for sites with sex and slander and slime and swearing and all sorts of stuff. And it took us about 6 months to get that label off it. And, you know, lots of people, if they're cruising around the web and they happen on the Right Side Radio and they're not one of our 2.5 million, whatever it is, listeners, if they see the word explicit, they're not going to open it. They're not going to recommend it to a friend. This is intentional. The other thing that we're finding is, particularly over the last 3 months, is that when we post a show, it's not coming up as a Google alert. In other words, their algorithms are skipping activity on the internet so as not to report it and people won't see it. So this show is experiencing this firsthand from Google, as are countless other pro-American, conservative, Republican, whatever you want to call it, sites and podcasts and radio shows and all sorts of stuff, even newscasts. We're all familiar with, you know, the conservative Congress lady, she's from one of the southeast states. They wouldn't run her pro-life ad for her campaign. That was Twitter. We now hear Project Veritas has a video interviewing top engineers, young punks from Twitter, who are talking about how they're laughing about how somebody does a Twitter account, does his tweets or her tweets, and they have it programmed, if they're conservative, so that the tweets aren't going anywhere. And they were laughing about the fact that the person who tweeted is thinking that nobody's responding. And then they cackled, because nobody's seeing it. And then, of course, we have the Twitter person who 3 months ago deleted President Trump's account for a day until there was an uproar and it was reinstated. Twitter blamed it on the employee, of course. It was his last day, whatever crap they came up with. I had planned to do about a half a show on that because it's that important. These tech giants are running amok. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of government, but they need to be broken up. This is an antitrust, anti-constitution, mind manipulation, and information altering things that are probably in violation of the First and Fourth Amendments, and they need to be brought under control. As you may know, Google, in fact, was sued last week by one of its former employees, and the lawsuit has like 51 pages of examples of complete discriminatory and, in my opinion, breach of civil rights bias by Google against men, white people, and conservatives, even down to their hiring practices and their firing practices. Now, the reason I'm not doing the show is because I have more research to do. There's been a whole bunch of news about Google and Facebook and Twitter and all the big social media, well, not all, most of the big social media folks along these lines. It's coming to light now exactly how biased these outfits are and what they are doing to manipulate information. Google, in fact, has recently come out with a fact check where they basically take other liberal websites to say that something that's stated is false on a conservative website. You don't see any of these fact checkers. I think there's like 32 or 36 conservative websites now that have a Google fact check button on it, and one left-leaning site. 36 to 1. And I'm sure that one left-leaning site, which is no big site, was put in there just so that Google would have some kind of defense saying, it's not all conservatives. This is a clear and present danger to you and I, the truth, information, the Constitution, and the future of the country. And when I get this additional research done based on what's come to light just in the last week, I'm going to bring you that show. And I think it'll make you shudder. And I think it might just make you think twice about using Google for anything. All right. So we have that. Excuse my little digression there, but important to say. Important to say. All right. Oh, my producer's gesturing at me. Yeah, some of the sites, and these are major sites. I mean, they're often quoted even in mainstream media. Some of the sites that Google have put fact checks on, which, by the way, are by Snopes, which itself has been declared left and wrong, is The Daily Caller, The Blaze, The Federalist, The Daily Wire, Breitbart, Conservative Treehouse, Free Republic, WND, they might need it, Truth Revolt, American Renaissance, Gateway Pundit, VDare. The only left-leaning site is Upworthy. Have you ever even heard of Upworthy? No, neither have I. All right. That, folks, kind of brings us into our next segment, which is immigration. Let me tell you. I can't tell you how pissed off I am at this immigration thing. America and you and I and our family, including everybody in our families who works or wants to get a job, have been sold down the river, particularly by the Democrats, but including certain rhinos. John McCain, Jeff Flake, Lindsey Graham, Cornyn from Texas. These people are pathetic. Now, most of you have probably heard about the big sit-down that Trump had at the White House, and he had the TV cameras in there, and they were discussing DACA and the wall and all sorts of other stuff. Well, we then come to find out the day before yesterday, Thursday, that Lindsey Graham, Cornyn, a couple of their Democratic friends, went to Trump with a proposal to, number one, give amnesty. We're talking about a path to citizenship and voting to all the DACA folks, to fund the wall with a measly $1.6 billion. It's a $20 billion project. To allow the DACA recipients of the amnesty to continue the chain migration of their families, trying to make it look like, oh, it's just a three-year thing, except that it was renewable for three-year periods. And we all know where that winds up, right? 6 years from now or 9 years from now, we'll all be talking about amnesty for the chain migration people from DACA. And then continue the lottery immigration, which has spawned two terror attacks just in the last 60 or 90 days. You know, that's the immigration deal where 50,000 people are selected at random from countries that, how do we say this politely? Oh, I think Trump said it politely, that are blank holes. You know, as a little sidelight, I had to laugh over the furor, the heart-rending tears that all the mainstream media and the hypocritical lion liar Democrats came out with. Oh, this proves he's racist because he likes Norway and Norway's white. And he doesn't like Haiti and Haiti's black. And his use of language was reprehensible and this and that and the other. And, you know, just ad infinitum. I mean, just absolutely, like, who cares? So let me tell you my little take on that. Within the context of this much broader discussion on immigration. First of all, what Donald Trump said, number one, senators who were in the room with him have now come out and said that that is not really what he said, and it was taken totally out of context, and it was not the words he used. He himself has said that. I don't know. I wasn't there. But let me put it this way. If he did say it, good for him. Because, you know, He's exactly right. I won't use the word that he's purported to have used, but those countries are crap holes. That's what they are. Them's the facts, Jack. And you know why they're crap holes? Let me tell you why. Because Democratic administrations have for years thrown money and aided and abetted knowingly the corruption in these countries at the upper levels, which siphons all the money away from its people and invests none, zero, nada, not one penny in getting these countries on their feet so they aren't crap holes. It's kind of like, it's a Democratic version as to countries as the Democrats are to welfare recipients. You know, if you make them dependent on us, they're going to vote for us. In the case of the countries, if you make them dependent on us, they're going to support us, or at least the corrupt guys at the top that are getting all the money. In the case of Haiti, I might add, a familiar name emerges. Bill Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. I've done shows on this. I did shows on this 3 years ago. So Clintons raise all this money through the foundation, supposedly to help the Haitians. We find out later that only a small percentage of the money that was raised to help Haitians even went to Haiti. And you know what else we find out? That a good chunk of that money went to their friends, including a son-in-law or brother-in-law, whatever the hell he was, to set up a monopoly on the cell phone system that was being rebuilt. And another chunk went to another guy who was setting up another monopoly in the quote-unquote rebuilding process. What do you want to bet that you'll find contributions from those guys to the Clinton Foundation? You want to bet? And now these same Democrats, the Hillary Clinton Google-eyed whatevers, are getting down on Donald Trump for calling them blank holes. That's what they are. They're blank holes. They're crap holes. And the Democrats made them that way, and the Democrats have kept them that way by supporting corruption. Because the Democratic Party, folks, which is really the progressive alt-left party, or should we say the progressive alt-left wed to Islamist party, is perhaps the most corrupt institution in America, with the exception of the Clinton Foundation and the possible exception of Planned Parenthood. By the way, I guess you know that the three of them kind of work together. The Democratic Party, the Clinton Foundation, Planned Parenthood. You know, they're all kind of in the same, shall we say, basket, passing around the goodies, supporting one another. And you know, it's kind of funny to me that the immigration that the Democrats have now begun to openly admit is prompted in their minds not by caring about immigrants or caring about refugees, and certainly not by caring about Americans. I mean, who are we? We're just Americans. It is prompted by a wish to, as Barack Obama said, fundamentally transform the United States. It is basically the admission of the Democrats that they cannot win an election through American citizens as the country is now constituted. Instead, they have to import a new electorate. That's what this is all about. And I mean all about. In any event, look, if you remember back in 2013, there was that outfit called the Gang of Eight in Congress. Rubio was part of it. Lindsey Graham was part of it. Several of the Democrats were part of it. And they came up with this huge amnesty plan for all the illegals and all the illegal aliens, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, it got deep sixed. Yay. So these people met with Trump. This is after Trump has his televised deal with the back and forth over DACA and the wall and the lottery, immigration lottery, and chain migration, which, by the way, has accounted for 44% of the immigration over the last few years. 44%. Wow. And they've been record years under Obama. Record. So this is what Texas, of all places, GOP Senator John Cornyn had to say. Visa lottery will stay. Oh, and by the way, yes, thank you for the reminder. James Lankford, Republican, Oklahoma, another one, along with Lindsey Graham. So Graham, by the way, is a co-sponsor of the Democratic Party's Dream Act. Dream Act. Okay. I guess Americans don't dream, just illegal aliens dream. And the Dream Act and the Dream Amnesty would deliver millions of foreign migrants into our consumer and labor markets at a cost of $26 billion for the first 10 years. You know, I did a whole show on this. You should type it in. Cost of illegal immigration, cost of illegal aliens, state by state. I went down the whole thing. And now there's figures coming out that indeed the cost of illegal aliens to the United States of America is about $131 billion a year. And that's as it currently sits. You increase immigration or illegal immigration, folks, and that number goes up. And, of course, the Democrats try and conflate legal immigrants with illegal immigrants. I've done shows, in fact, last week's show, I went over the crime statistics. Legal immigrants, those who followed the rules and came here, God bless them, yay for them, yay for America, they are the lowest crime group in the United States, less than 5%. Illegal aliens are the highest crime group in the United States, in some cases accounting for 79% of certain serious felonies. 79%. Illegal aliens, who are only 4% of the population, comprise 21% of the federal prison population. God only knows what the percentage would be if you put in the state prisons. Yet these people want to bring in more illegal aliens, legalize the illegal aliens that we have here with no vetting whatsoever, continue the lottery visa, and most importantly, continue chain migration for DACA and for everybody else. The average illegal alien brings in 7 other people under chain migration, some of them as many as 22 to 24. Now, if you have 1 million people a year, I'm just going to take a round number, it's actually low, 1 million people a year coming here illegally or being granted some type of amnesty or legal status like a green card or refugee status, and they each bring in 7 people, that's 7 million. If they each bring in 22 people, it's 22 million. If they bring in something in between, it's 14 or 15 million. You think that has any impact on this country, on its politics, on who gets elected, on who makes laws, on how the Constitution is interpreted, and in the end, how much money is in your pocket, what kind of job you have, what you're getting paid for the job, and whether or not the Constitution will remain alive? You're damn right it does. And that's exactly, folks, and they're beginning to admit it, why they want to continue immigration. And I'm going to tell you that Trump, and I love the guy in a lot of respects, even with his sometimes glaring imperfections. In fact, his imperfections, although I don't like them, kind of endear him more to me because we all have them. When he sits in a meeting with the mucky mucks and he calls blank hole countries, he's just saying what you or I would say if we were passing or talking out of the windows of the pickup. Because that's what they are. Water runs downhill. 2 + 2 = 4. The facts are the facts, Jack. And we don't need folks who don't have specific skills, can't speak English, etc., from any country, including those countries. I have nothing against Haitians. I have nothing against folks from Santo Domingo or wherever. Nothing against them at all. If they can speak English, if they think American, they want to be American, they have skills they can bring to the table, they can contribute to America and to American citizens, and make themselves better in the meantime, I don't care if they turn out to be billionaires. Good for them. That's what it's all about. But I'll tell you what I do mind. I do mind anybody coming to this country for a handout, free abortions, free medical, welfare, assisted living, free transportation to the city of their choice, free education at the expense of our kids, who refuses to assimilate, use English as a primary language, and et cetera, et cetera. I really, really, really mind that. And we have millions of people who fit that bill. And the Democrats, led by Obama, and going all the way back to Clinton's years, are all about it, despite the lies they feed you in public. Bill Clinton talking about how important it was to have national sovereignty and firm borders. Google it up. Barack Obama talking about how we needed to build a stronger border. Google it up. In the meantime, just like Barack Obama's library that's supposed to be filled with books and archives but is going to be filled with a movie theater, the truth is far from the fiction of their words. I'm really tired of it. And I am really tired of so-called Republicans aiding and abetting them. It is beyond my comprehension. And these Republicans talk about how illegal immigration, promotes competition in the labor market. Really? Is that what we need? We have American citizens who have seen less than a 2.4%, that's underneath the rate of inflation, so you've lost money, a 2.4% increase in pay rates over the last give or take 20 years, but we need more competition in the labor force. Really? Wow. Where'd you go to economic school? Where'd you go to American school, for that matter? There's another Republican senator, by the way, by the name of Tillis, who likes to outsource jobs, by the way. He's all for that. I wonder who's giving him his campaign donations. And he's pushing another amnesty bill called the Succeed Act. Boy, wait till you read it. Dial it up on Google and read it. You can retch. And you will retch. Let me give you a quote. It's clear there's a deal to be struck on protecting dreamers and strengthening border security. So the fact that the president and Republicans in the Senate are actually meeting on this is very promising. You know who said that? A guy by the name of Jeremy Robbins. He happens to be the executive director of the Partnership for a New American Economy. And he's working with the Rhino Republicans and the alt-left Democrats on the DACA deal and all this stuff, which is designed to keep lottery immigration, designed to keep chain migration, etc. By the way, do you know where Robbins' group, the Partnership for a New American Economy, do you know where he gets his money? Oh, yeah. Mike Bloomberg, anti-gun Mike Bloomberg, and surprisingly, Rupert Murdoch. Maybe not so surprisingly, because Rupert Murdoch is a hard-nosed businessman and very successful. And guess what? Rupert Murdoch's businesses would definitely benefit, folks, by the inflow of cheap labor and welfare-aided, that's your money, consumers. So, you see the Democrats stand up and go, oh, well, 80% of the people support the DACA, blah, 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 blah. They make this stuff up out of whole cloth. In a December poll, let me give you the real stats. And Google can put the fact check on the Right Side Radio. A December poll of likely 2018 voters, I'm reading this to you, shows 2-to-1 support for Trump's pro-American immigration policies and 4-to-1 opposition against cheap labor, mass immigration, economic policy pushed by the bipartisan establishment, that's what I was just talking about. The poll was done by Numbers USA. All right. Business groups and Democrats tout the misleading Nation of Immigrants poll instead of the Numbers USA poll. If you read that poll, you should dial it up. Nation of Immigrants poll. Or should I say poll questions? And the questions are clearly designed to get an answer, yes, I support legalizing DACA illegals and the 3 million Dreamer illegals. I mean, all you got to do is read the questions. You'll see what I'm saying. Folks, 4 million Americans, 4 million of us turn 18 every year and start to look for jobs in the American economy. 4 million. Now, our federal government for the last 30 plus years, since 1965 actually, but accelerating in the last 30 years, they inflate the supply of new labor. In addition to those 4 million kids turning 18 every year, accepting 1 million new legal immigrants inflates the market to 5 million, provides work permits to another 3 million resident foreigners, inflating the folks looking for work in that market, that lower tier market, the beginner market, for the most part, to 9 million. And the government does nothing. Well, it just started. Just started this week with business raids and E-Verify. But the government does nothing, or has done nothing, to block working by the 8 million or so estimated illegal aliens who are in the labor market. Now add all those numbers up. Okay, we are a nation of 350 million plus or minus people. There's a percentage of us that can't work. We're too old to work. We're too sick to work. Whatever it happens to be. There's X amount of jobs out there. The better the economy does, the more jobs there are. A la Trump's economic policies, or Trump's, shall we say, economic attempts, which so far he's succeeding at. And the same with JFK's attempts. And the same with Ronald Reagan's attempts. And the same to a lesser degree, only because he was forced into it, a portion of Bill Clinton's presidency's attempts. But when you have 17 million, add up the numbers, 17 million people in the workforce looking for basically the same job, number one, a lot of them aren't going to find a job. And you know who this disproportionately affects? That's right. Black kids. Black kids. And Hispanic kids. And Asian kids. It directly, materially impacts not only existing American citizens, but all the folks that the Democrats lie to us and say they care so deeply about. Because they don't care about the jobs. They don't care how many people are entering the labor market. They don't care about what they're paid. They don't care about any of it, folks. They care about, are they healthy enough to get to a polling station and pull the lever for Democrats in every election? That's all they care about. So anybody who looks you in the eye and promotes, like these rhinos, any immigration policies which flood the market with foreign labor, spikes profits and Wall Street values because it cuts salaries for manual and skilled labor, right? Supply and demand. The more labor you got, the less you can pay each unit of labor. Drives up real estate prices and costs. Widens the wealth gap, you know, the gap between the very wealthy and the very poor, reduces high-tech investment, increases state and local tax burdens. Gee, I wonder why those blue states, who also happen to be sanctuary states, also have the highest tax, property tax, and sales tax, and income tax. You think there's any correlation? You bet your bippy there is. Not only do they have to create money out of working people's pockets to buy off American citizens that they want votes for and who are not working, but they have to support the illegal aliens, millions of them, in their midst, in the hopes that they're going to become voters in the future. It so angers me. I can't even tell you. Can't even tell you. So, you know, you got 5 million. This, they estimate that this marginalizes at least 5 million Americans. Either they can't get a job, or the job they get is not anything what they were looking for, or the job they get is paying squat, or a combination of those factors. And also leads, believe it or not, and there's several studies now that link these, to an increase in opioid addictions and alcoholism and other drug addictions. Because people without hope turn to other things. Of course, if you have an open borders, they get all the opioids they want, right? You bet. Let me give you some examples. 27% of the zip codes in Missouri, and by the way, this also harms, let me give a preface here, this really harms rural areas. The red states, folks. It's another example of the blue states bludgeoning the red states. Let me give you some examples. 27% of the zip codes in Missouri had fewer jobs or businesses in 2015 than in the year 2000. By the way, this study was by the Economic Innovation Group. Please feel free to Google it. And Google, if you're fact-checking me, please, you feel free to Google it too, Google. In Kansas, 29% of the zip codes had fewer jobs and businesses in 2015 than 2000. Now, what happened between the year 2000 and 2015? Oh, that's right. Massive cheap labor immigration, or should I say illegal immigration, that were all resettled primarily to blue state areas, folks. So the blue states are sucking part of the economies out of the red states. You know why? Because the blue states have a ready, willing, and able labor pool that undercuts wages that would otherwise be paid to U.S. citizens or illegal or immigrants who are here legally. I mean, can you see the correlation here? And if you're a business in Kansas that has to compete on a national, even a regional, but certainly a national, international, global level, you can't sit there in Kansas and pay somebody, I'm taking a number, $15 an hour. When if you move to the outskirts of Chicago, let's say, or the outskirts of New York City or L.A., you could hire illegal alien labor for $5 an hour. And if you don't make the move, and which means you take the jobs and the facilities and all that stuff with you, like these examples I gave you just in Missouri and Kansas, I can give you dozens. If you don't make the move, your company's going to fail. A company who pays employees $10 an hour to make the same goods and services as a company who pays its employees $5 an hour is going to lose. Period. Anyway, we're going to keep our eyes on immigration, but the minimum 4 points that you must, folks, if you value this country and you value your children and the children's children, the Constitution, your freedoms, your salary, your job, hell, your safety, you must take a minute or two, even if it's two sentences, and send a letter or an email or make a phone call to all your congressional representatives and to all your senators. You might even call these rhinos. I don't think it'll do any good. And you must tell them the following. Number one, no path to citizenship except under existing law, the same as every other immigrant to this country doing it properly and doing it legally must follow. No path to citizenship for the DACA kids. No path to citizenship for the Dreamer kids. No amnesty whatsoever for illegal aliens which do not fall in those two classes. If you ain't a Dreamer, who will be on a lower rung than the DACA, If you aren't a dreamer and you are not DACA, you don't even have the chance to go through the normal channels for citizenship unless you return to your home country and come back like everybody else. Number two, chain migration ends now. There is no more chain migration for the DACA folks, who, by the way, many of whom are now in their 30s, some of them in their 40s, they aren't kids, for the dreamers, for illegal aliens of any type, for anybody with a green card, period. You want to bring family members over here? They're limited to your wife or husband, your kids or your siblings or your grandparents, and only, and let me underline this 10 times, only if you came here legally, you followed all the rules, you obtained your citizenship exactly as the law and the rules prescribe, and then you will have the privilege of bringing over your relatives, who, by the way, must. They are not, there's no green, there's none of that stuff. If you bring over a relative, they must go through all the steps to citizenship before they get any of the benefits of citizenship. The same rules will apply to everybody, whether it's the person from Haiti or the person from Norway or wherever who's been waiting in line, has written checks, has taken the tests, has done the studies, has done all the civic stuff. Nobody gets citizenship, the right to vote, or the right to suckle off the American teat, which is you and I, unless they follow the rules. Period. The only thing the DACA and the Dreamers are getting is, A, they won't be deported, and B, they can work. And C, by the way, if they don't pay taxes, if they screw around, if they have so much as a traffic violation, their butt is out of here forever. Number two, the wall, and I don't mean the fence, and I don't mean the little infrared thing between sensors, and I don't mean the drones, I mean the wall, must be built and fully funded. Number three, chain migration ends. I think I made it a part of number two also, but chain migration is done, over, finished. Number four, the lottery immigration system, the lottery visa, done, over, finished. And number five, all the people who have been brought here by chain migration are absolutely, positively not eligible for citizenship unless they go through each and every step that any other legally applying immigrant follows to obtain A, resident status, and B, citizenship. End of story. Oh, and one last thing, since big business is obviously funding these rhinos, E-Verify. Number six, E-Verify. If you are a business and you hire an illegal alien, if you hire a non-resident alien, if you hire anybody outside the confines of the laws that govern who you may hire, the sky will fall in on you. The legal costs and fines will drive you out of business. And if you have one single employee on your payroll who cannot pass or has not been through E-Verify, you're toast. Now, if we take those six steps, folks, let me repeat them real quick. DACA and Dreamer. No amnesty, no citizenship, unless they go through all the requisite steps. No voting, no welfare, no suckling at the teat, no nothing. If they want to be U.S. citizens and get U.S. citizen benefits, then they step up to the plate and they follow the rules to be U.S. citizens. The only thing they get is they won't be deported. End of chain migration, period, for anyone and everyone other than a legally applying immigrant who has obtained U.S. citizenship by all the legal requirements and then only to direct family. And as to that direct family, they must follow all the steps to be a legal resident and then the steps to be an American citizen. As part of that, all the chain migration folks who have come here over the last 10 years, they're out of here. Or they have 5 years to start the steps to be a United States citizen exactly as prescribed by law and exactly as legal immigrants do. Absolutely no voting, I might add, for any of these classes of people. Then e-verify for all businesses. And there's no second chance. You screw up once, you're done. Build the wall. Stop the immigration lottery. Those are the six steps. Write your congressman and your senator today and raise holy hell, folks. Do not let them sell out the future of you, your children, your children's children, this country, and the Constitution, which is exactly what they're trying to do. Exactly. And now they're admitting it. All right. Let's talk about the economy a little bit, shall we? Let me just say one more thing about immigration. This is the single biggest danger. Not North Korea, not Russia, not China, although China may be in the future. This is the biggest single danger to the sanctity of the United States. Illegal immigration and immigrants who are not fully assimilated, who are allowed to dictate the politics of this country. By the way, before I get into this economic stuff, I think you heard that another one of those Looney Tune judges in San Francisco, backed up by the Looney Tune alt-left judges of the Ninth Circuit, have now said that Trump's executive order, which undoes Obama's executive order, to shut down DACA in March if a deal can't be reached, is illegal and unconstitutional, and he can't do that. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment, folks. These are your top-level judges appointed by Obama and the left. Never mind that this ruling is completely unconstitutional. Never mind that the folks who brought it have no legal standing to bring it whatsoever. But they are saying that Barack Obama's executive order on DACA, allowing the kids, the people at that time who were kids, they're not kids anymore, who came here, they didn't make the decision, they were brought here by their parents, whatever. That was an executive order that Barack Obama issued illegally against the exact tenets of the Constitution without consulting Congress. In other words, it is an illegal executive order in every way, shape, and form. Donald Trump's executive order basically rescinds, that's all it does, is rescinds Barack Obama's previous illegal order. These Looney Tune judges out in far leftsville, appointed by Obama, have ruled that Trump's rescission of an illegal executive order is illegal. Wrap your heads around that for a moment. Now, let's talk about the economy. All right, look, everything is rocking right now, or seems to be, right? I mean, the stock market is up, your 401k, your IRA, whatever little investments you may have, those of you who don't have retirement accounts, you are likely being paid more by your employer depending upon where you're at. Maybe many of you who listen to this show, because I have people, Canada, United States, all 50 states, overseas, wherever, have seen a raise. Maybe you were one of the several million people who got bonuses, 500, 1,000, 2,000. Maybe you're one of the recipients of additional health care your company is now paying for you. Maybe you were formerly unemployed and now you found a job. Maybe you're looking at your house valuation, which I'm going to just take a number as an example, was $100,000 in 2008, went down to $70,000 by 2010, and is now back up to $130,000. Maybe you're one of those folks. Maybe you got dibbles and dabbles in all those things. And let's face it, people are pretty optimistic. Business is optimistic, or they wouldn't have thrown about $1 trillion in employees over the last month since the tax bill passed. We wouldn't be seeing the labor participation rate going down, finally, or going up, I might add. The more people are participating in the labor market. It's still, by the way, really abhorrently low and historically low, but it's getting better. Okay, we still have 12 million people in poverty, down 2 million since Trump took office. I mean, there's many things which would dampen enthusiasm, but let's face it, enthusiasm is pretty rampant. And, you know, it's pretty easy to get caught up in enthusiasm, to throw every shekel you have at the stock market or at Bitcoin or at gold or at silver or whatever have you, whatever floats your boat, to run out there and buy a new car, which, by the way, I don't recommend at all, to go out there and buy a new car, to put money into your house, not for things that add value, but things that, you know, are just kind of fun stuff. You know, things that you want, but that the buyer of your house down the road, whenever that is, may not want. To go on an extra vacation. Listen, I'm not telling you not to enjoy life. I'm not telling you not to spend money. But I do want to bring to your attention some absolute facts. They are as clear and historically accurate and irrevocable as any facts this humble reporter can bring you. And I want you to watch the canaries in the coal mine. And I want you to be, I don't want you to be a Scrooge, unless you want to be a Scrooge, but I want you to think before you spend frivolously. And by the way, I have the same talk with myself, okay? I'm not just yakking at you. I yak to me along the same lines. Because, you know, there's lots of glitter out there that you can spend money on that is really tempting, right? Isn't there? I mean, if you're a skier, you can get new skis. And if you're a hunter, you can get a new gun. And, you know, if you're a horseman, you can buy that new expensive horse. And on and on and on. That shiny new car, that new motorcycle, you know, the new boat. I mean, all the stuff. So let me give you a, not a dose of pessimism, but a dose of realism that you should be watching. First of all, let me give you some background. So the Dow, it went from 24,000 to 25,000 in 23 trading days, folks, in the last month. 23 days, it went from 24,000 to 25,000. When it went from 23,000 to 24,000, it took just 24 trading days. Both of these are records. Do you think the Dow might hit 26,000 within the next 22 trading days? It's possible. But let me tell you something that's going on which could serve to dampen stocks a bit. That's not to say they're not going to continue to go up. I really don't know. As I've told many listeners on this show, and by the way, this segment is being prompted by a number of emails I've received over the past few months saying, what do you think I should do? And you know, I answer them all the same way. I am not your financial guru. You must have an advisor, whether it's your attorney or your CPA or your accountant or somebody in the family that kind of knows finances or business. I mean, don't talk to Reed. Talk to somebody close to you whom you trust. But the recurring theme I've gotten from these communications from listeners is, I feel really good about stuff. Should I go buy that new boat? Or I feel really good about stuff. Do you think this continue to go up? or whatever. I mean, I don't even know why folks are asking me these financial questions. I have never held myself out to be your guru, your financial guru, or a financial advisor of any type. I got enough problems managing my own stuff, which, by the way, sometimes I do beautifully and sometimes I do really poorly. Welcome to life. One of the things which may affect the stock market, I'm not saying it's tomorrow, but it will have some kind of effect and probably not beneficial, is that, and I've talked to you about this before, the Fed is beginning to not print so much money. It's beginning to buy less United States treasuries. It's beginning to take money out of the system. It had a balance sheet, the Federal Reserve, comprised mostly of bonds it bought from ourselves, which is really scary in and of itself, of $4.5 trillion in November. They have talked about how they're going to be knocking off $20, $30 billion of investment a month, which is a pretty good pace of tightening. Not huge, but pretty steady, good pace. The more money that they don't print, the more money they don't buy bonds with, the more money they take out of the system by not buying bonds, is the less money there is in the system. I mean, I'm really simplifying this. But the less money there is in the system, folks, the less money everybody has to do everything they want to do. And the less money banks have to lend, unless at a higher rate. Understand that basic principle. When you have cheap money and lots of it, things tend to rock and roll, particularly if you have a president like Trump, deregulatory, tax, pro-business, etc. When you have a tight money policy or a tightening money policy, things tend to contract. And let's face it, all you folks who are listening to me, if your decision was, should I buy this week's groceries, or should I buy $100 worth of stocks? You're going to buy this week's groceries. And when money gets tight, you don't have the choice of, I'm going to buy groceries and stock. You have the choice of one or the other. Do you kind of follow what I'm telling you here? By the way, the money that central banks, whether they're in Europe or whether they're in Japan or whether they're in America, the central banks like the Federal Reserve, when they create money out of thin air, when they print money and buy their own bonds and all this nonsense they've been doing called quantitative easing, type that in the search bar. I've done a bunch of shows on it. Quantitative easing. When they do that stuff, it's called dark money. The more dark money there is, folks, the more money can flow to investments like stocks and all that other stuff. And the less dark money, the less money will flow to it. And obviously, the less money that flows to a stock market or any type of investment like that, the less the probability of that stock market rising or rising as fast as it did, and the higher the probability of it remaining stable or decreasing. Let me give you some facts here. So the Fed's balance sheet, that $4.5 trillion, although they said they were going to be knocking out $20-30 billion a year, decreasing billion a month, decreasing their balance sheet, i.e. less money in the system, it was only down $10 billion, which is like a rounding error, in the last several months. Okay, the Feds call this tapering, by the way. So in your canary in the coal mine, listen for the word tapering, okay? Listen for the words buyback. Listen for the words Federal Reserve balance sheet. And when that starts to get up to the $20 or $30 billion a month mark, and it will, and when that balance sheet starts going down from $4.5 trillion to $4.45 to $4.4 to $4.35, that's a canary in your coal mine. What also affects dark money is what the European central banks do, because it's all interrelated. So, also your canary in the coal mine should also include, although you don't see a lot of stories on it, what are the ECB, as they're called, European Central Banks, doing with money supply? If they're beginning to tighten the money supply, that is going to run its course here in America and affect the Fed, if indeed the Fed's not leading the charge. Okay. One of the things a lot of corporations are doing is they're buying back their own stock. Now, and some corporations are raising dividends. Now, you may rub your hands in delight because this drives up the price of stock. Obviously, when they buy back stock, the less stock there is, the more each piece of stock is worth, right? Real basic economics. And you may be delighted with the fact that your 4% dividend from company ABC has now gone to 4.6%. But these are expenditures by these companies, folks, which do not create value. They don't create value short term, except to artificially, in my opinion, pump up the price of their stock, primarily so the insiders can get rich. And they do not promote value long term. They didn't build a plant. They didn't build a new manufacturing facility. They didn't invest in research and development. They didn't pay for a new training program to make their employees better and better. They simply took the money and kind of spent it. Now, when that starts to run out of steam, one of the underpinnings, one of the many underpinnings of the stock market and similar types of investments is going to sag. It's just the market, folks. So the second canary you need to be looking out is keep your eyes tuned to the words buyback, stock buybacks or dividends. When you start hearing commentators saying that either buybacks are really accelerating or buybacks are being cut back, that's a canary singing in your coal mine. There's a very famous investor by the name of Jeremy Grantham. His argument is that it's not so much how much a stock market or any market is worth in its composite. In other words, whether the Dow is at 25,000 or 26,000, it's composite. It's how fast it gets there. That's one of his canaries in his coal mine. And when he sees new market tops, 24,000 Dow, 25,000 Dow, 26,000 Dow, et cetera, or in any market, when he sees new market tops that come faster and faster and faster, that's a canary in his coal mine. Let me quote, accelerating prices, not high prices themselves, or even high PE, that's price-to-earnings ratios, are the true indicators of a bubble. So, look, one of the things I want you to think about is, you know, the media does a lot of hype on all this, right? I mean, they've been hyping Bitcoin and digital currencies now for about a month, and they've certainly been talking about even the left-wing fake news is talking about the Dow, okay? I mean, they don't want to because they think that somehow will help Trump, but they have been talking about it. And the more people talk about it, and the more euphoric people get, and the more people that go to the investment, the more you have the chances for what's called a bubble. And you know what happens to bubbles? Bubbles always, let me underline that word, always burst. Sometimes it's the pinprick of some event that comes out of the blue, a North Korean nuke, an Iranian sinking the Iranian Navy sinking a ship in the Straits of Hormuz, a huge terror attack to some American or European city, some kind of disease that gets out of control in Africa and starts. Look, you can go on and on and on. A natural catastrophe of epic proportions. You can go on and on about the things that can trigger this stuff. And that's a pinprick that pops a bubble. And then other times the bubbles just get too much air in them and they just burst by themselves. But bubbles always burst. This Grantham guy, who's really kind of famous, thinks that there is a 90% probability a meltdown will follow this bubble. And he uses the word meltdown. Now, look, who knows when that is? Maybe the Dow will go to 40,000. I don't know. Maybe tomorrow will be the peak of the Dow and it'll start falling off the day after tomorrow. I don't know. But I do know that economic history is inviolate. It will repeat itself. There was a Russian economist by the name of Kondratieff, who, by the way, was executed by Lenin, because he predicted that economic cycles come huge, the big, big tsunamis of economic cycles come in 50-year waves, and that the Soviet Union was doomed because it would be caught in the next 50-year cycle. He was executed by Lenin for these thoughts because it was, you know, anti-Russia in Lenin's mind. And the cycles, these 50-year tsunami cycles, the huge cycles, like the Depression of 1929, 1930, 31, et cetera, et cetera. These tsunami economic cycles were named in his honor, called the Kondratieff Wave. So the Kondratieff Wave, folks, is like, based on his work, it's like right offshore. Okay, I'm not saying he's right, he's wrong, he's indifferent, there's a wave, there isn't a wave. I'm just telling you that his work, which has proven to be respectably accurate, give or take a few years, since he was executed, I think, in 1917, was it? I believe it was 1917. His work has been pretty accurate. And the wave cycle, whether it's the 7-year waves or the 22-year wave, I mean, there's all sorts of waves out there. The wave cycles have been pretty much inviolate, and you can go way back before Kondratieff to see it. You can actually go back to ancient Rome and see the wave cycles. So, third canary is keep your ears tuned for the words wave, Kondratieff wave, 9-year wave, any of those things. I mean, I'm not saying you have to believe in them. Just listen to what may come across your auditory senses. There's a gal by the name of Nomi Prinz, also well-respected economist. She had a really interesting article. I believe it's they're both posted under Family Safety, both the article that I just kind of worked off of and the article I'm about to talk to you now. Look under Family Safety. I don't have it under Economy, folks. It's under Family Safety for a reason. She has an interesting theory. Let me kind of summarize it. She says the Dow Industrial Average, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow, went up 24% last year. The Dow Jones U.S. Real Estate Index rose 6.2%. The price of one Bitcoin rose 1,646%. And so far, just in the first 2 weeks of 2018, it's been the same. However, the median wage that we are all paid one way, shape, or form rose just 2.4% last year, which is less than inflation, real inflation, folks. And the labor force participation rate, although better, is still at 62.7%. That means 62.7% of all people who would like to work and who are capable of working are not working in the United States. And that's despite this 4.1% whatever blah 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 unemployment stat that you always hear. We have 1.3 trillion, underline that, of student debt hanging out there, which our poor millennial generation, for the most part, they're millennials, has to pay off in service. Now, on the other hand, you have limited number of jobs, increasing competition for jobs by illegal aliens, and in some cases, legal immigrants, a la the segment before this. And a country which was purposely mismanaged by the Obama administration for 8 years after the last recession, which was under George Bush's watch, but which was caused by the Democrats. And you can go back and listen to my shows. Listen, you know, just type in housing crisis. Type in Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. Type in Community Reinvestment Act. You should listen to those shows. She continues to talk about, and she does a beautiful job in the article. It's worth reading. It really is. Everything she says that almost everything that's happening is because of this cheap Fed money, the dark money I just talked about, and the low rates that that dark money creates. The more money you got, the more money there is, the less valuable it is for loans, et cetera, i.e. the lower the interest rate you pay. Just the opposite is true, too. I don't know how many of you remember this. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I bet many of you do. Do you remember when mortgage rates, hold on to your hats, you younger people, mortgage rates were 18%. That's 1.8%. The prime rate was somewhere around 21%. 21%. Do you remember when that was, folks? That was just 30 and a few years ago. That's what happens when money gets tight, when the Federal Reserve and the other central banks turn off the spigot. And I can get into this whole interrelationship of inflation and money supply. I'm not going to do any of that. I'm trying to keep this like really 2 + 2 = 4, you know, a two-year-old like me with a crayon like mine, understandable. Corporate debt, because of all this dark money, which has allowed the $1.3 trillion in student loans, which is unbelievable. Corporate debt, just in the last few years, has gone from its levels of $3.4 million before the last big blowout, remember 2008, 2009, has grown from $3.4 trillion before that bubble burst to $6.4 trillion. Bank derivatives, which almost brought down the whole banking system in the last 2008-2009 mess, have doubled their levels of what they were before 2008-2009. Derivatives, just real quick, is when a bank buys a piece, not all, but a piece of the action from another bank, which is a piece of action that that bank bought from Bank A, which is a piece of action that that bank bought from Wall Street X. In other words, it's a sliced and diced financial instrument that's filtered through many sectors. I'm making this really easy. Derivative. In your little coal mine, watch for the canary that talks about derivatives and corporate debt, particularly corporate bonds. If corporate bonds begin to default, your canary is beginning to whistle. One of the things she talks about is that many companies are being artificially propped up now by this dark money. Okay, she talks about the Bank of International Settlements, which is called BIS, kind of the central bank of global central banks, for lack of better explanation, actually has now started to define zombie firms as, quote, firms that could not survive without a flow of cheap financing, end quote. The BIS quarterly report, and they do a quarterly report which encompasses the planet, now says that one out of every 10 corporations in emerging and advanced countries are zombies. I want you to think about that for a minute. One out of 10 companies, maybe companies you have stock in, certainly companies whose stock value will affect the overall stock market or bonds or whatever, If interest rates rise as the central banks have less dark money, in other words, tighten the money supply, there's going to be an awful lot of carnage out there, and it's going to spill out into other markets. So in your little coal mine of canaries, add the canary of zombie companies. I'm sure it's a term that you will hear more often over the next year or two. Hopefully not too often. All right. Let me continue. For those of you who are thinking about, who are reveling in the fact that your house is way up in value and this and that and this and that, and your real estate investments are way up in value, I'll tell you my personal theory. Number one, the only real estate investment, and it will fluctuate, but that holds, maintains, and increases its value over the long term without fail is land. Particularly land that can be utilized to live on, to enjoy, to grow things on. That land has real value. And it cannot be duplicated. It is an asset that there is no more of, that cannot be duplicated. Any house, any shopping center, any office building, anything that is built of bricks and mortar can, that is C-A-N, can be duplicated. Which do you think has more value over the long term? Something that can be replicated over and over, or something there is one of? Pretty easy question to answer, isn't it? Now for all you, and the same with houses, by the way. Right? You can build a lot of houses. There's other things going on with the housing market. The millennials are starting to get into housing. And I mean, there's some very bullish factors for housing. But let's face it, you have less buyers if you're a house seller, if people are paying more interest on their funds, on their mortgages. Less people can qualify to buy your house. You have a smaller market that doesn't help your value. If there's any other kind of economic hiccup, the stock market falls off precipitously, corporate bonds kind of fall by the wayside, all these zombie firms tip over, I mean, you name it, right? North Korea, Iran, I mean, the list is endless. The value of your house can fall. We all saw it, right? Every single one of us saw it in 2008 and 2009. And they were big declines. Some areas of the country have not recovered fully yet. Others, like Denver, are rocking and rolling, and they're way, way past what they were before. But one of the things I'd like you to think about is if you are one of the many, many people out there who have a nice equity in your house now, you've regained your equity, it's come back, and you've been thinking of selling, and you've been saying, ah, you know, I'm not going to sell till next year because little Joe is still in school or whatever your reasons are. There's a million different reasons. Everybody's unique. I'd like you to think about maybe getting that piece of real estate, that house, on the market. You know, you may leave another 10%. Let's say you have a $200,000 house. I want you to follow me on this. Let's say you have a $200,000 house. And that house is going to appreciate, let's say, 10% over the next 2 years. So 2 years from now, it could be worth 220. I mean, some markets may be more, some markets may be less, but let's just use those round figures. But let's say that there is a chance, perhaps not as big a chance, but a chance that something could go horribly wrong that you can't control in the markets, in employment, in the economy, with the central bank, with interest rates, with Iran, with North Korea, with a disease, a natural disease. I mean, the list is endless, right? Terror attack. And your house could go down 10 or 20% in value over the next two years. I want you to ask yourself a question. Do I want to be 100% certain of getting $200,000 now? Or do I want to be 50% certain of getting $220,000 2 years from now? Just ask yourself the question. Different folks out there listening to me may have different answers. But I will tell you something. And my dad taught me a long time ago. You can never go broke making a profit. And I'll tell you something else. And this is a lesson I've learned over decades in real estate. If you put off the real estate deal of today to tomorrow, tomorrow will never come. Just a thought for you. And by the way, Treasury bonds, which is really one of the key underlying factors that govern interest rates, Treasury bonds have begun to rise. That is, the yields, the interest rates on Treasury bonds have begun to rise. In fact, just in the last 4 weeks, they're now up to March, let's see, was it March of 2016 or 15? March of 2016 is when they last reached this level, which was a new high for about several years before then. There is very bullish, that is, a lot of bond traders out there. As people, believe it or not, you know, there's stock traders and there's gold traders and there's this traders and that traders. There are people who deal just exclusively with bonds, financial instruments. And they are like overwhelmingly bullish right now that bonds are going to get better and better and better. Now, you know the way a bond gets better? And trust me, I'll tie this all back into your house in a minute. When interest rates go down, the value of bonds goes up. It's called an inverse relationship. When interest rates go up, the face amount or dollar value of a bond goes down. The inverse relationship. And what these bond traders are all like 99% euphorically forecasting is that interest rates are going to keep going down. We already know that's not the case. And bond prices are going to get more, are going to go up and up and be more and more valuable. Let me tell you that over the last 35 years, every time bull sentiment on the part of bond traders has been over 90 plus or minus percent, there's been a collapse in bonds. In other words, interest rates have risen and the value of bonds has gone down. So interpolate that canary in the coal mine. Put that canary in your coal mine, particularly you homeowners who are thinking of selling sometime in the relatively near future, a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. When you start hearing about bonds going down, that means rates are going up. When you hear about treasury bond yields going up, that means mortgage interest rates, the next tier, is going up. And those things mean the value of your house, if it's not going down, could very well begin to go down. There's going to be less people that can buy it. Think about this, okay? And I'm not saying that there aren't a bunch of markets out there, maybe Denver, 3.5 hours south is one of them, that there's not a bunch of markets out there that, they don't have another 30, 40, 50, God only knows how much to go up. I can't tell you that. But I can tell you to listen to the canaries in your coal mine and make educated, not emotional guesses. I talk about that in my Land for Love and Money book, for those of you who haven't read it, by the way. Land for Love and Money. Okay, you got to take the emotion out of your real estate decisions. And I'm not saying you can't love your piece of land or love your house or, love your office building or whatever it is. But let me tell you, the dollar sign has to outweigh the love factor. Because if you want to get to a point where you don't love your real estate, try getting to a point where you're losing money on it. Then you're not going to love it so much. So this last Tuesday, to go along with what I'm trying to tell you here, the yield, that is the interest rate, on 10-year Treasury notes, right, this kind of underlies everything, closed above 2.5%. Above 2.5%. The other thing that happened during the course of this week is that China said they were going to start diversifying their foreign currency portfolio, and they were going to start limiting the amount of U.S. treasuries that they buy. Now, China later disclaimed this as fake news and all this stuff, but if you want my personal opinion, China would love to own less U.S. government securities. China would love to take an economic step which protects their investment, A, and B, hurts our economy, which is their rival economy, right? The only economy in the world that can rival China's is ours, and vice versa. And anything they can do to increase interest rates to slow down the U.S. economy is a kind of strategic benefit to them. In addition, China was sending a warning shot across Trump's bow, because if you remember, Trump has been jumping up and down on starting to impose trade restrictions with China, partially because the playing field is unlevel, thanks Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama, and who knows who. But also because he wants to put pressure on them for North Korea. And this leaked story, later quote-unquote disclaimed, was China saying, hey, you screw with trade with us, and we're going to screw with your financial markets. So, put this canary in your coal mine. China's purchases of U.S. treasuries. All right. A lot of this thought comes from a guy by the name of Steve Sigigarud, I could never pronounce his name. But he's a pretty salient guy. He almost never gets it wrong. Now, listen, anybody can be wrong anytime, any team, any day. But this guy is, like, pretty prescient. And there's other people who are beginning to think like he does. One guy's name is Jerry Gundlach. He's from Double Line Capital, a huge bond firm. He's called the bond god, in fact, in the markets. And he thinks the 10-year treasury yield rise, in other words, interest rates on government debt, it will be at 3% by the end of this year, which will have an effect, folks, on all these things that we've been talking about. Bill Gross, another guy dubbed a bond king, and he started the investment firm PIMCO. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's huge, billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. He thinks that yields, i.e. interest rates, are going to go up. Let me throw another canary in your coal mine. And you're probably sitting there with your eyes glazed right now going, what is this guy talking about? And I got so many damn canaries. I got bird poop all over my coal mine, and I'm not liking this. And where's the vacuum cleaner? U.S. consumers spent a lot over the holidays. I mean, it was great. You saw all the economic reports. However, here's what you didn't see. Credit card debt, in other words, the debt that we all owe in our credit cards, increased by $11.2 billion in November. That's the largest monthly increase in a year. You and me and all other Americans now owe $1 trillion in credit card debt. Now, we all know that most credit cards are charging interest rates of what? 10 on the low, 15 to 18 typical, and God only knows what, 20 to 30% on certain cards. Now, if you have $1 trillion in credit card debt and you're paying 15% on it, let's just take a round number, that's $300 billion a year in interest that we are all paying. That doesn't create value, folks. It doesn't put food on the table. It doesn't buy you a boat. It can't be used as a mortgage payment on your house. In other words, something somewhere at some point has to give. Consumer spending went up 2.7% last year. That's really big rise. Here's the story that you didn't hear. Disposable incomes, in other words, the money that we all have after basic living expenses, only went up 1.9%. In other words, folks, we are borrowing. Take what I just told you about credit cards at 15-whatever percent. What I just told you about disposable incomes, real net growth in your income of 1.9%, but your spending went up 2.7%, and you can see what's going on, right? Our spending is going up because we're fueling it with debt, high interest rate debt. That is not sustainable. Put that canary in your coal mine. The savings rates for consumers, that is you and me, dropped to 2.9% in November. 2 years ago, the savings rate, folks, was 6%. So not only are we taking on more debt of all sorts and forms and at high interest rates to spend more, we are also saving less, in other words, less rainy day funds, to spend more. Once again, eventually that is unsustainable. Put savings rate, put that canary in your coal mine. Total consumer debt increased to $3.8 trillion. All of us owe, never mind the bank and all that. I'm talking about just on like credit cards and for washing machines and car loans and all this crap. We owe $3.8 trillion, folks. That's the largest monthly increase in consumer debt in 16 years. Student auto loans rose to $16.8 billion just in November, a 7% increase from November of 2016. Do you see the pattern here? We are spending more and more at high interest rates, which seem that they're going to increase. We're saving less and less. You know, this whole kind of big picture, this macro picture I'm bringing you, it's a canary in your coal mine. So, you know, one of the things, too, is social unrest that this creates, right? As people get more and more into debt, as students who busted their butt for 4 to 6 years, we hope, getting their degrees, can't find a job because of illegal immigration, who knows what for. They can't find a job. They got, you know, a $40,000, a $60,000, a $100,000 student loan. They got no job to even pay the interest on the loan. As this happens, people tend to get desperate. They tend to get pissed off. And many of them turn to violence. It's part of the underpinnings, in my opinion, of Antifa. No, I don't think it has anything to do, my producer's talking. No, it has nothing to do with Islamists, because they aren't driven by whether or not. That's an Obama theory. Oh, if you give them all jobs over there in the Sinai, then they won't do anything bad. Yeah, no. They're driven by religious fanatical ideology. It's a whole different ballgame. But here in the United States and the Western countries, when people get in a financial hole and have no financial hope, they can turn violent. And an increase in violence we have certainly seen over the last year. Now, the mainstream media attributes it to Trump and yada yada and all the rest. But you know what? I attribute it primarily to economics. Trump is just kind of the mask that they use, so to speak. All right. Next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's called a debt jubilee. You'll find it very interesting. In fact, for those of you who are biblical, and I don't pretend to be biblical, it's in the Old Testament. The book of Leviticus, chapter 25, if you'd like to look it up. But next week, we will talk about a debt jubilee, which all ties into this segment I just did. Now, I am way over time. I might add that the producers are experimenting by speeding up the show. And last week, they speeded it by 10%. And I actually got a lot of good comments from people. We would love your comments on that. We'd like to we would like to know if you think it's too fast or whatever. But be that as it may, I'm just going to hit our last segment very briefly, just to kind of keep you in tune with like the treasonous tsunami of information, which we're now finding out just over the last week. So our friend Strzok, treasonous Mr. Strzok, and his lecherous consort, treasonous FBI agent Gray, Linda Gray, it seems that some more of their texts have been let out, and now they were texting, and I have this article up under treason, by the way, they were texting about leaking, this is a felony, this is all felony stuff, leaking results of the Mueller investigation and leaking stuff to hurt Donald Trump, whether true or not, and leaking stuff to help Hillary, particularly if she had any bad press coming out, to the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal. And they're even talking about, oh, the article's going to come out tomorrow, and, oh, wow, that was close. You know, we got to be really careful about using FBI agents. And they were even called on the carpet by some senior FBI agents. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Really fascinating. Let me read this to you. When they were quoted as, quote, Justice Department attorneys and FBI officials, unquote, in a Washington Post story, they almost got busted. Page got a call. That's the gal, the FBI attorney gal, from the FBI chief of staff, James Rebicki. And she writes her her consort, Mr. Strzok, quote, this is a text. Sorry, Rebicki called. Timeline article in the Post is super specific and not good. Doesn't make sense because I didn't have specific information to give, unquote. Oh, man, you talk about a smoking gun, huh? Let me give you another one. Unbelievable. Friggin' unbelievable. Ah, one of their leaks, Strzok texts, he sends a text to her, quote, just a tiny bit from us, unquote. Page texts back that she feels good about how they had stabbed James Comey in the back for another story. Quote, makes me feel way less bad about throwing him under the bus to the forthcoming CF article. Oh, man, this is unbelievable. So there was a Clinton Foundation story that came out, right? Quote, article is out, but hidden behind paywall, so can't read it. Quote, Wall Street Journal? This is from Strzok. Wall Street Journal? Boy, that was fast. Should I find it and tell the team? Unquote. Page writes back to him. Quote, I can get it like I do every other article that hits any Google News alerts. Seriously. Man. So this is pretty amazing. Let me give you a couple more samples just real quick because these are just unbelievable. Where's another one? Well, maybe I'll save that for next week. I mean, what's also come out this week is that the dossier, which was fake, which was paid by Clinton, which money was filtered through a law firm, and then the Fusion GPS, and then Christopher Steele, who's now been referred for criminal prosecution by the Senate Judicial Committee, and then paid to Russian agents for made-up stuff, and then given to John McCain, listen to this now, John McCain, this all came out this week, who then gave it to the intel agencies, who then used it to A, launch the investigation with their buddy Mueller, and B came before A, to get the FISA warrants to spy on Trump while he was a candidate and during the transition, and it was all known to Obama and Lynch. I can't tell you what a huge story this is. I can't tell you how treasonous, anti-American, unconstitutional, illegal this pattern, this RICO, fraudulent, criminal, treasonous pattern of activity is, folks. And now it's all coming out. And it seems that these people weren't satisfied just to do that. Then they went the next step of unmasking, illegally unmasking hundreds of people in these illegally intercepted communications through fraudulent, illegal, and unconstitutional applications for the FISA warrants themselves, using an illegal, fraudulent, foreign influence, Russian influence, in fact, dossier by weaponized intelligence agencies, by an illegal and corrupt administration, to help an illegal and corrupt candidate, Ms. Clinton. It's breathtaking, is what it is. It's breathtaking. And by God, let me tell you, I'm as hot about this subject as I am about immigration. Some pipers better be paid on this. I don't want just the investigation. I don't want to know just all the facts. I want the investigation, I want the facts, and I want the facts turned into indictments, prosecutions, and hopefully convictions. The sanctity of our rule of law, and I've given you this spiel before, I'm not going to belabor it this morning. Our rule of law is at stake. The other thing that happened this week, I'm hitting these really quick. It could be, I mean, if not, they're so breathtaking, I'll be out of breath. Judicial Watch, right? They've done such a great job of getting these documents that the FBI and the Justice Department and the State Department have been stonewalling for years. I mean, they've really done an excellent job, and you should donate some money to them. They do phenomenal work, folks. Maybe more than any other outfit to get to the truth. I mean, without them, these Senate and House committees would be nowhere. You and I wouldn't even know about it. They found 18 classified emails, I mean marked classified, talking about sources, names of agents, methods in foreign countries, which included, let's see if I got this list here, The Hague, Egypt, South Africa, Zimbabwe, the identity of a CIA official, Malawi, the war in Syria, Lebanon, Hamas, and the PLO. These emails were sent by Uma Abedin from Hillary Clinton's illegal and treasonous private server on unclassified email circuits to her pervert husband, Anthony Weiner's laptop computer, and then sent from there. And Uma baby lied about it in 2010 to the FBI. Huh. Who would have thought? Huh? Who would have thought? By the way, these releases were from the State Department, which had been hiding them up to now. And listen, that's not all. Here's what else came out this week. So Weiner's laptop also contained classified material from Abedin's BlackBerry. Remember when they pounded, when the FBI, when Comey and Strzok allowed them to destroy their BlackBerries and stuff? I brought you a story with hammer, literally with hammers. A July 9th, 2011 email had classified information regarding a then upcoming call between Clinton and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. November 25th, 2011, classified information was sent regarding an ambassador's notes on the Egyptian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Hamas, Palestine Liberation Organization talks. May 4th, 2012, additional classified material. I mean, folks, this stuff's unbelievable. It also came out that Abedin and other top Hillary people like Mills were given laptops and fobs, which is a physical device that provides a login code, logins and passwords to log onto a laptop, and a secure State Department website, including a PIN number. Abedin forwarded all this login information through Hillary's unsecure server to Abedin's unsecure account. And then she lied about it to the FBI. Now, last week I told you about Hezbollah, Barack Obama stopping the investigation, which is now being reopened into Hezbollah, bringing $200 million of cocaine into this country, running arms, etc., so that Hezbollah, which is an arm of Iran, could continue to do its dirty work while Obama continued to do the Iran deal, of course, to the benefit of Iran and the detriment of the Western world and America. What else has come up this week, again, and it's all tied into perhaps this leakage, perhaps intentional, by Abedin and others on Hillary's deal. Remember Abedin's affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood, both directly and through her mother, who runs a Sharia law newspaper. I've brought you all this in previous shows. Now it appears that Barack Obama leaked information of an Israeli plan to kill the top terrorist in the world, folks, a guy by the name of Soleimani, who's the head of the Quds Force of Iran. The Quds Force in Iran has killed and wounded and maimed thousands of U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan because the Quds Force has distributed, financed, and trained all sorts of nasty operators in those countries and in other regions in the construction and deployment and operation of IEDs, roadside bombs. In addition, this guy is responsible for blowing up the embassies in Africa, hundreds killed. He's responsible for planning the assassination of a Saudi diplomat in Washington, D.C. in a restaurant, which would have killed hundreds of Americans. And I can go on and on and on. It has now come to light this week that Barack Obama alerted the Iranians to an attempt to assassinate this slime bag, this top terrorist in the world, this killer of thousands and maimer of thousands of American troops. While Barack Obama was commander-in-chief, he gave that information to Iran to thwart the Israeli plot. I'll let you, you've heard all the dots from me before on Obama, Islam, and particularly Iran. I'm not going to recap them for you this morning. I'll let you draw your own conclusions. We have lots to talk about next week already, and who knows what's going to be happening between now and then. But in the meantime, I am way over my time limit. They'll probably have to speed this show up by 190%. Anyway, I hope you like the new format. And I know it saves you some time listening, and we would welcome your comments. And thanks so much for listening to all of you. We covered a lot of stuff, and it's my pleasure to do so. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk at you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.